Mr. Burgundy, you have a massive erection.
Can throw out all those great backs and great quarterbacks and great defensive players throughout the country and in this conference. But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than a team. No coach is more important than a team. You raise me
up. This is Michigan, for God's sakes.
This is The Sophisticated Boner, a Michigan Man podcast. For your listening pleasure.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Sophisticated Boner. I am your host, Mark the Nomad, and I am joined by my courageous co-host, the sole proprietor of the Big House Report, the man, the myth, the legend, Joshua Henschke. How are you doing tonight? I hope you're feeling better.
I am feeling much better, but I'm feeling very depressed. I have a sad Michigan hurt me in ways unspeakable.
I too have a sad, and I think tonight's going to be quite a bit of a therapy session for multiple reasons. Number one, we didn't do a podcast last week, so the Akron wound is still festering, and then Akron pissed. Oh no, I'm sorry, not Akron. UConn pissed on the wound and made it much worse.
Yeah, I agree. It's, yeah.
So yeah. I've got some theories. We're going to talk about that. We're going to preview the Big Ten games that are coming up this weekend. There's only four Big Ten games on the docket as many of the schools in the Big Ten hit their first bye week. And so there's not a lot to talk about in terms of Big Ten football. But we will talk about Wisconsin going to the horseshoe, the toilet bowl, and facing up against our hated rivals, the Ohio State Buckeyes. So we'll talk about that a bit. We'll preview that game. But first, I think we need to talk a little bit about the current sad state of the Michigan Wolverines. They're 4-0. They're 4-0. But they may be the worst 4-0 team I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, granted, perspective-wise, 4-0 is great, it's fantastic, but you lay a gigantic egg the past 2 weeks. You're extremely lucky to be 4-0, but I don't know if they're the worst 4-0 team right now, but they've played like it the past 2 weeks. I mean, we know what they're capable of. We've seen it against Notre Dame. But then again, is Notre Dame really an impressive win? I mean, if you look at them against Michigan State, they weren't that great. And so we might be overplaying that Notre Dame win now. So I don't know. It's just a weird season, a weird situation. I just don't really can't just get a grasp on it.
Let me ask you. You said yesterday that you had an analogy that you were going to drop on me that would make me want to punch you in the face.
Yeah, excuse me.
So let me know what that is so I can punch you in the face.
Basically, I probably will just derail the entire podcast with this, but watching Michigan the past 2 weeks is like farting and then having it smell so bad that you can't stand the smell of it and you have to leave the room. That's basically what I felt like watching Michigan the past 2 weeks. It's like I had to just look away and just I couldn't stand it. It was just... it was awful. Absolutely awful.
I don't want to punch you in the face for that. I understand where you're coming from. I don't agree. I feel like the last two Michigan football games are like being at your grandparents' house and you know that they're having sex in the next room, but you can't say anything because they're your grandparents. And you don't want to cope with the fact that something awful is happening right near you, but in the end, you just have to ignore it because you're happy to be with your grandparents.
I don't have a side comment for that one.
Well,
that one's,
if we're trying to derail the podcast, let's talk about our grandparents having sex.
Yeah, that just, yep, I think that totally just did the job. Derailed it.
Yeah. All right. So that's this episode of The Sophisticated Boner. I am your host.
Oh.
All right, so I've decided that I want to talk about some of the positives of what happened based on the fact that Michigan is 4-0. Do you think there's ever been, and I'm sure we could look it up, and there's some stat person out there that could find this out, but is there a team that has lost the turnover battle so severely in back-to-back games and still managed to win both of those games?
I'm sure there's been a couple of teams. I can't recall of anyone off the top of my head right now. I'm sure someone can, but I'm sure it's happened, you know, once or twice before. But that's an anomaly, and that's definitely an issue that needs to be fixed as soon as humanly possible. Because Minnesota, if you compare Akron and UConn to Minnesota, they're on a different level. So if you're gonna turn the ball over against a Big Ten team, excuse me, then you're not gonna win. I mean, it's going to be a disaster if they play like this continuously. It hurts. It hurts deep.
It's concerning because you're going up against a Minnesota team that could potentially be coming into the game 5-0, very confident. They take on Iowa this weekend. Iowa is at home. I'm sorry. See, I'm on freaking NyQuil, and I'm completely cracked out. If I fall asleep mid-podcast, just wrap it up and talk to yourself.
I got it.
Minnesota's at home. They're 3-0 at home. They get Iowa, a team who did a very good job of defeating their rival Iowa State. But when you look at some of the other games Iowa's played this year, they lost to Northern Illinois, which is not a bad team. They beat Missouri State, and they beat the piss out of Western Michigan, the same Western Michigan team that gave the Spartans trouble that first game of the year. Iowa's going to come into that game confident. They're going to want to establish the run. But then you look at Minnesota, who's coming into the game 4-0, is doing a really good job running the football. They're 13th in the nation in rushing offense. They're averaging 280 yards a game. They're averaging 41 points a game and only giving up 20. And, you know, they're beating the teams that they should beat well. It's not something you can say for Michigan. Michigan is not beating the teams that they should beat, whereas Minnesota's blowing the doors off of San Jose State and Western Illinois, New Mexico State. They beat UNLV that first week. We're very lucky to get the bye.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So they're getting Minnesota off of their bye week, and They couldn't have come in a better time. It's a 3:30 game. There's going to be a lot of eyes on this game, especially if Minnesota comes in undefeated. What are your thoughts on the Golden Gophers? But more importantly, what does Michigan have to do to right the ship before a potentially decent Minnesota team could come to town? Sucks to say that, but they go after the Notre Dame game, we would have thought we're going to beat the shit out of Minnesota.
Right. I do like Minnesota beating Iowa. I think it'll probably happen. I think because of the running game alone, I think it'll probably beat them. But I posted about this today, about the five pressing issues that Michigan must fix. I think the biggest one out of them all is Devin Gardner fixing his turnovers. I think he needs to make smarter throws, either throw it away, take a run when you have the chance. I mean, I think that was incredibly frustrating. He had a couple of open lanes to just take off and run, but he didn't do it, and instead forced a pass that either led to, you know, horribly incompleted or, just another turnover. So I think that's a big thing. The offensive line, they need to step up. I mean, there's a couple of times during that UConn game where they just let the defenders walk right in and just get a free shot on Gardner or whoever was back there. Defensive line needs to have more pressure. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, I think another one, too, is that someone else needs to step up other than Jeremy Gallen. There needs to be a wide receiver other than Gallen, period. I mean, we can't rely on an undersized wide receiver in this type of Michigan offense, and it's not going to work. Guys like Funchess needs to step up. Chesson needs to step up. I mean, I guess you could say Delio needs to step up, even though he's undersized as well. But, I mean, it's just I just don't understand it. I mean, basically the offense has practically disappeared since Notre Dame. This isn't the same team we saw 2 weeks ago. I think they're going through a little bit of a identity crisis here, and they need to get that figured out first before anything. It's just a laundry list of issues that need to fix. And like you said, I think the bye week comes at a perfect time where they can fix those issues, or at least begin to address them to the point where they can band-aid it against a Minnesota, a team that they should probably beat if you want to compare talent levels. But you know, I guess we'll find out in 2 weeks what we're talking about here, but and it's just it's kind of concerning the amount of issues that are arising right now.
I would argue that the wheels started to come off the Devin Gardner Express the minute he threw that pass against Notre Dame that was intercepted for a touchdown. That seemed to be – I know they put together a great drive, but that you know that game winner, the one that put them ahead 41-30, was aided by a pretty egregious pass interference call that ultimately led to the game-winning touchdown. Now – his confidence was rattled after that. The mm-hmm. offense and the momentum completely shifted after that interception when Tua intercepted it in the end zone from what was a perfect game by Devin Gardner. Now, that to me suggests that we have a bipolar quarterback because the minute that things are going great, he can do no wrong. But the minute that it starts to go a little south or, you know, starts to get tough, he's buckling under that pressure, and I think it goes back to – I mean, you look at his body language after he threw that interception against Notre Dame. It looked like he thought he had just lost the game for Michigan. He was mm-hmm. banging himself on the head. He was inconsolable on the sidelines. Now, dating back to that Notre Dame interception for a touchdown, Michigan has had a turnover in three straight games that has led directly to points for the other team. We had the Steven Tua interception. We had the interception return for a touchdown on the screen pass to Toussaint in the Akron game. And then we have the fumble recovery for a touchdown. That's three straight games where the defense for the other team has run back some form of turnover that ultimately makes the game much closer than it should be.
No, I agree. I think, no, usually I don't like to argue with what Brady Hoke says, but I honestly think it's a confidence issue here with Gardner. He said, Hoke today said that, you know, he needs to be smarter with the football. I mean, I agree with that, but I think confidence is a huge thing too. I mean, if you are just, you know, throwing up lame ducks, you're going to get rattled if it's not, you're not being successful. I mean, we've seen it the past 2 weeks. I mean, Gardner might have came in against UConn and perfectly normal what we would have expected against Notre Dame. But when he threw that interception, everything went south, like you said. So I honestly think it's a confidence issue. I mean, obviously Hoke isn't going to, you know, call him out during the pressers and say, oh yeah, he's, you know, not confident in the pocket, blah, blah, blah. But there's real issues there that he needs to fix. That's why they need to start out really strong in 2 weeks' time to, you know, get his confidence somewhat back. Because I want to mention this now. It's premature for a quarterback change talk. I don't think Michigan should explore that option. You know, Shane Morris is talented, but I don't think he's talented enough to fix what the offense is doing right now.
If we were going to see Shane Morris, we would have seen him already against these teams that were quote-unquote layups. You don't start a freshman beginning the meat of your Big Ten schedule. You don't throw him to the Wolves against Minnesota. You don't make him go on the road to Happy Valley and face Penn State. You don't make him go on the road to face Michigan State. It's Gardner or bust. You know, I think a lot of the onus has to go on to Al Borges. I think the Akron game, the Connecticut game, he has not set up his players for success. And I know I'm piggybacking on some of the things I saw on MGo blog today about the picture pages, but Al Borges is a very two-faced individual. He either calls a perfect game, the plan that he comes up with seems to execute to perfection. I think he had a great game plan against South Carolina last year. I think he had a equally terrible plan against Ohio State in the horseshoe. But when he plans correctly, when it goes right, you think about that 2011 Ohio State game, how perfect Denard played and how the calls were correct. But then you go back to the Notre Dame game from last year, and there were some real head-scratchers where Michigan's driving into the red zone, and he calls a halfback pass for Vincent Smith that gets intercepted at the goal line. When Borges is bad, he's real bad. And I think a lot of that has to do with stubbornness. He doesn't have the wherewithal or the moxie to say, I'm going to change my plan and adjust to what they're doing. He just said, it almost feels like, and I can't quote the guy. I'm not in the room. I'm not in his head. But from a fan's perspective, from a visual perspective, it seems like he's the kind of person who's like, oh, you don't like oatmeal? I'm going to spoon feed you this oatmeal until you like it, because this is what we're running.
Right.
And you see it with a lot of these pistol plays and these plays that they're calling. It's just not meshing. And I think it's up to the offensive coordinator, and who technically is also the quarterback coach, to put his player in a position to succeed. When a player's rattled, you're not asking him to throw bombs down the field. You ask him to throw easy passes, even if you have to dink and dunk, just to build his confidence back up. And that's not happening right now. It's either Devin's going to run the ball, or he's going to try to throw it downfield, and either a disaster happens, or Gallen makes a circus catch, or blank. We don't know.
Right. No, I think someone mentioned this the other day, and I kind of agree with them. It's just most of the time, it was like with Denard, the wide receivers would oftentimes stand around and watch for Robinson to make a play. Well, this is the same case now. Most of the time, you'll see wide receivers kind of stand around and wait for Gardner to make a play with his feet. It's no one's moving to get open. So, and they're expecting Gardner to, you know, break off 20-yard runs every time when a play breaks down, but it's not helping. And like you said, I agree with the Borges sentiments too. I don't think he's calling the right game to put his players in a position to succeed. I know he said earlier that they wanted to do downhill running, and they're not doing it. I mean, granted, they probably aren't at that level yet where they can run straight downhill and smash mouth football. But I don't know. I mean, it's concerning. It's definitely concerning, especially considering the type of, you know, the noise that was surrounding the program heading into this season this year. It's definitely not what was expected coming into this season at all.
Well, I think Borges puts us at a schematic disadvantage, because if he's not willing to deviate from his plan and there are no adjustments made, it plays into the hands of some of these teams that actually have quality defensive players. Ohio State comes to mind. The Michigan State game, Borges has not done well against Michigan State in the two previous years. I know they eked out a win last year, but Pat Narduzzi consistently outcoaches Al Borges when they play each other. And at times, the Michigan offense looks confused when they play Michigan State. Now, we have to go to their house, and they've got two, three weeks to get it right. They've got the bye this week, and then they've got to go to Penn State, which will not be a picnic in any terms. They get Indiana at home, and then they get a bye week to prepare. But what is the point of a bye week if you don't put in contingency plans to make your offense work when the going gets tough? When it's like an alcoholic father, man. You know, when things are good and it's good, it works. But when it gets rough, man, you get abusive dad who slaps mom at the dinner table and everyone has to pretend that nothing just happened. That's a terrible, terrible reference.
Speaking about derailed podcasts.
Yeah. Let's talk about domestic violence.
Yeah.
So we're at this point now where you can clearly see that Gardner has got – he's locked in on Jeremy Gallen. Gallen obviously leads the team with 320 yards receiving. Going into after the Notre Dame game, you would say Jeremy Gallen's a stone-cold lock to be Michigan's next 1,000-yard receiver. But since that Notre Dame game, it's really dropped off, and teams are figuring that this is Gardner's only option at times. I mean, positive note, Devin Funchess is averaging, you know, 18 yards yards a catch, but he only has 8 receptions on the year. Now, we're 4 games in. The guy's only averaging 2 receptions a game. He's supposed to be a focal point in the offense. That, again, goes back to the offensive coordinator. Put your playmakers in position to make plays.
No, it's incredibly disappointing. I really expected Funchess to have a breakout year, and it's really not looking like there's any potential to break out. Granted, the season's still young. There's still plenty of games left, but I just don't get it. I mean, Funchess, I think Funchess is a pretty good player. I may be a little bit biased, but I think he's a pretty good player. And the fact that he's practically getting ignored, I mean, maybe he's just, Gardner's just not checking him down. When he does his checkdowns, he just focuses on one receiver. I'm not sure what the real issue is there, but I don't get it. And another thing, too, is if they plan on shuffling offensive linemen, that's not good. No. I mean, granted, you want to have a rotation, but not like that. You don't want to shuffle guys out.
You do not want to have a rotation on the offensive line. Offensive line needs continuity and consistency. You can rotate defensive linemen because they have to maintain gap integrity and their goal is to stop the run or rush the passer. You need stability. You need continuity in your offensive line. And I think they're just going to have to ride or die with what they have. Glasgow, Miller, and Kalis in the middle. There's really no alternative. If Chris Bryant was going to be that guy at guard, he would have been that guy at guard already. We're 4 games in. The tune-ups, the quote-unquote tune-ups, that should have happened already. Let's switch gears a little bit. Now, the defense played incredibly well against UConn, considering they were given a short field on the touchdown from the muffed punt. They really only gave up 1 touchdown. The other 7 points were scored again off the fumble recovery for a touchdown for UConn. So the defense only yields 7 points on the night that was a legitimate drive for UConn where they drove down the field. Some positives, Desmond Morgan clearly on that one-handed interception was an amazing play, but what it showed me is, they're making adjustments and they're listening to the coaching, because I remember seeing Desmond Morgan, especially in the Akron game, get burned over the middle, over the top, probably 5 or 6 times against Akron, and at least 2 or 3 against Notre Dame. So they're coaching up Desmond Morgan, he's responding, he's making plays, but it all comes back to that pass rush, and now they're starting to get some pressure on the quarterback, and good things happen.
Yeah, I think they need to do that a little more. I mean, it was great to see Frank Clark get a couple of sacks against UConn, too. That was nice and much necessary, because everyone was calling him to have a breakout year, and it hasn't quite happened yet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was great to see. That one where he was basically, like, running in circles on the ground and pulling that guy down by his jersey, that was pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was badass. We needed that desperately.
Right. And Jake Ryan's only a couple weeks away, so the linebacking group's going to get a little bit rejuvenated once he comes back. So, I mean, there's a potential for positives, and hopefully those positives are realized and executed, because there's definitely some potential for opportunities there, too. So, we'll see.
It's a lot of ifs, and that's a big problem. You know, if Gardner doesn't turn the ball over, this happens. And, a lot of these turnovers, these crippling turnovers, are happening in the red zone. The option fumble against Akron. These things, Devin took the 4th down call on that bizarre 4th down quarterback sneak where Magnussen was in the game and he actually caused the fumble by just getting blown off the ball and pushed into Gardner. Some of these calls, they're absolute head scratchers to me. I don't get it. And I don't want this entire podcast to devolve into what the fuck, Borges, but I feel like that's where it's going, because I don't want to pick a scapegoat, but you're the guy on offense, and right now it's not working.
Yeah, typically, the blame will be placed upon the coaches when the team struggles, but I think it's warranted this time around. It's just like you said. I mean, I really can't add anything more that hasn't been said about Borges. I think the struggles also are placed on his shoulders. I don't think it's a fireable offense in the offseason. Well, depending on how the season goes, you might want to think about the future of Al Borges in the Michigan offense.
He's not going anywhere. I'll bet my left nut that he is going to be the offensive coordinator. They have tailored their recruiting to get guys that fit his prototypical mold. I mean,
right.
They're not recruiting spread types anymore. And you know what? If Shane Morris is the – I don't know how good Shane Morris is going to be. But if you're requiring if Shane Morris was the quarterback right now and you were requiring Fitz Toussaint to – however you say his last name. I'm sorry. Grammar police, get on my ass. Fitz. If Fitz is the running back for Shane Morris – this year, and we're relying on him to pick up key first downs instead of Devin, considering Devin has 49 carries and 300 yards, and Fitz has 79 carries and 320 yards, Shane Morris is not going to pick up these first downs with his feet. We are relying heavily on Gardner. So, yeah, we can criticize him for turning the ball over. We can criticize him for making poor decisions or being, you know, or lacking confidence. But the fact remains that this team is where it is right now on the legs of Devin Gardner, not Fitz, mm-hmm. because Fitz has been underwhelming, to say the least. And I know people are going to clamor and complain, and they're going to say, where's Derek Green? Where's Devion Smith? At least give Justice Hayes a try. You'll say that until you put Justice Hayes in the game or you put Derek Green in the game and he's got to pick up a blitzing safety or a blitzing linebacker and he doesn't do it and he whiffs and he gets our quarterback killed. Fitz is a senior. He's been in the system for 3 years. He understands the system. He knows how to pick up a blitz. He's in there on third downs. There is no other option. They're freshmen for a reason. There's a reason why freshmen generally get pulled on third down, because that's when the defense brings their A game. They want to get you off the field, and they're going to throw some exotic shit at you to get you off the field. Madison does it. He exploits matchups. And if Greg Madison saw Derek Green in the backfield with that look in his eyes, like, who do I have to pick up? Oh, he's salivating. He's licking his chops because he wants to kill the quarterback. So Fitz is your running back. You're going to have to deal with it, and he's got to play better. That's it. He just has to play better.
Right. No, it was great to see him pick up 120 yards against UConn, but I felt very underwhelmed with his 120 yards. Granted, he picked up a clutch touchdown, and he had a huge run comeback on another holding call, which is really starting to get annoying, too. But that's, a totally different conversation. But I do feel very underwhelmed with Toussaint. It's very much the same what we saw last season. It's just very underwhelming. Again, he just likes to dance around and not try to find the holes. And yeah, it's like I said, you live or die with Toussaint, just like you live and die with Devin Gardner. So he's going to be the guy, no matter how many people start whining and crying about it. There's nothing else they can do. He's going to be the guy unless he gets hurt or academically ineligible or something. So. Yeah,
they definitely miss Jake Ryan, and that's clear. He's an all Big Ten performer, but James Ross and Morgan have done admirably in his absence. Blake Kaunas, in my opinion, has been the MVP of that defense. He steps up and stops the run. He's in guys' faces. He leads the team in interceptions. He's been a revelation in terms of keeping that defense in check. He's another leader on the field. I hope he stays healthy. I think Michigan's defense is going to keep them in every game they play this year, and it really is going to be about turnovers, and it's going to be about putting them in positions to win games. And I think they're going to bounce back against Minnesota. I think that if there's a team that they're going to flip that switch again, it's got to be Minnesota, unless they've just been playing down to their composition. And when they play teams that are a little bit more, competitive, they will, like the Notre Dames of the world, they'll play up to their competition. But hopefully this is out of their system. I still have faith that this is a good football team, that this is a team that is going to make a run for the legends. That's, right now they're 4-0. They're tied with Minnesota and Northwestern for the lead. They have to go on the road to face Michigan State, but they get their two biggest games essentially at home with Nebraska and Ohio State. Now, that trip to Northwestern in the middle of November, that's, if Northwestern somehow beats Ohio State, that's going to be the biggest game of the year. And they've got a squad that can beat Michigan. They do.
No, You won't see me disagree with that. I just, you know, I think in regards to Minnesota, I think it's a perfect game to bounce back. You're playing against your rival. You get to win the little brown jug for your efforts. So I think it's best, definitely, and also you're coming off a bye too. So I think it's definitely something that would be, you know, a huge opportunity to bounce back from. I don't think Michigan is a bad team. They're playing bad football right now, but they're not a bad team. The talent they have on their roster, I think, you know, they put them in a position. I think they'll still compete for the Big Ten. The season's early. You know, I'm hoping it's just a case of playing down to their competition. I really do. I really hope that's the case, and they step up when the time comes. But it's just really frustrating to watch right now because you know they can do better, but it's like it's just something that they can't the switch they just can't flip right now, and it's irritating. So hopefully that happens, you know, in a couple weeks, but we'll see what happens.
Well, they got Minnesota. And it's a 3:30 game. They've got an extra week to practice. They've got an extra week to prepare. And I think we've kind of beat that horse to death. So let's talk a little bit about Ohio State and their game against Wisconsin. I don't know if they're drawing the game day crowd, but I know it is the primetime game that night. It'll be the Herb Street, so to speak. So Wisconsin's 3-1, should be 4-0. They got completely hosed at Arizona State, and Ohio State is who we thought they were. But I mean, they just beat. I don't care if you're playing, you know, the worst Division II team. You beat a team 76-0. Things are working. A little bit of a quarterback controversy. I mean, I say that in jest because we know that Braxton Miller is the starter when he is healthy. But it's a shame that Kenny Guyton sat on the bench for so long because I would have really have loved to see him play at another school and have a chance to start because I think he's a great talent. I think he fits that offense better. He reminds me a lot of Chris Leak, the quarterback that the Gators used to have under Urban Meyer when they were transitioning to the Tim Tebow era, a guy who won them a national title in 2006 with Tebow coming in for spot relief. He just has that understanding of the offense. He gets them in the right play. He seems to, you know, I mean, he threw for 6 touchdowns. That's a big deal. I know it's FAMU and, you know, it's, you know, a little podunk school and their schedule is what it is, but they're starting to get that machine rolling. It's like a ball of knives. But they are going to face their first defensive test and the first team on their schedule that can realistically run the ball and essentially keep the ball out of Ohio State's hands. They've got a quarterback who's completing 63% of its passes. They've got 3 running backs that are averaging over 7 yards a carry. Melvin Gordon for them is averaging almost 12. They've already rushed for 1,400 yards as a team this year and 15 touchdowns. This is a team that can grind it out, can wear you down. And the Buckeyes' biggest question mark going into this game is, can that defensive line that replaces John Simon, that replaces Jonathan Hankins, can they hold up against a stout offense that can move the ball and really wear them down and frustrate them? What do you think?
You know, Wisconsin is an extremely fun team to watch. I mean, their running game is amazing. I really thought that there was going to be a significant drop-off there when Moneyball went to the NFL, but, I mean, basically, you're sitting there, Badger fans are like, Moneyball who? Because, I mean, that's just an incredible numbers that you rattled off just 4 games into the season. And honestly, I think Ohio State's going to beat Wisconsin, but I think Wisconsin will definitely give them a run for their money. I mean, it's just because of the running game alone. I mean, I'm not sure if Joel Stave will be able to pick apart that defensive back group, but I mean, it'll be a fun game to watch regardless of outcome because that Wisconsin running game, man, that's amazing.
Yeah, and you throw on top of that they still have Jared Aberderis, who is. He's that gritty, tough white receiver.
He's that blue collar. He's a blue collar.
He's going to get you a first down. But, you know, going into this year losing Monty Ball, you really thought there would be a drop off, and they still had a guy, James White, coming back, but he hasn't even been the story of the year. I mean, this Melvin Gordon kid, he's just absolutely tearing it up. He's got 7 touchdowns right now, and I don't know. I mean, I think ultimately Ohio State wins the game, and it's the difference in the game is them playing at home. I do think it's going to be close, but it's ultimately up to the Wisconsin defense to not let Ohio State score at will, essentially, because what Wisconsin has not been able to do this year is come from behind and win a game. Now, they've got this running game going, but that whole thing is predicated on them having a lead and grinding it out. If they've got to play from behind, they're going to put the ball in Joel Staves' hands, their quarterback, who's completing 63% of his passes, but only for 8 yards an attempt, and he's only thrown for about 700 yards. I mean, he's having a good year. He's only thrown 3 picks. He's having a good year. But they haven't really faced anybody who can really bring that speed. They played Arizona State, but they had to go out to Arizona State, and they got absolutely screwed. There's no other way to put it. But then the next week they bounce back, and they beat the hell out of Purdue, and they've got 2 tough weeks. They've got to go to Ohio State. If they beat Ohio State, they go and they face Northwestern at home. This is a good-looking team that if the bounces go right for them and they actually upset the Buckeyes, after that Northwestern game, they don't have a hard game for the rest of the year. Now, I know that it's already written in the walls and the trophy's already been etched out that Ohio State is your your leaders division champ. But if Wisconsin wins this game and goes in and takes care of Northwestern at home, all they have to do is play Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Minnesota, and then they wrap it up versus Penn State at home. They've got a game versus BYU in there, but that's going to have no bearing on the Big Ten. So if they beat Ohio State, this could be the team that is going to the Big Ten championship game again.
Right, it's amazing because they're, you know, Wisconsin's the past 3 Big Ten champions in a row. I mean, that's amazing, and to go back to the national championship
Big Ten, nowhere close.
No. Big Ten championship 3 games or 3 times in a row. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, that's like it's almost like a conference dynasty there. I mean, granted, that's based upon solely upon if they can beat the Buckeyes. But I mean, if they beat Ohio State, unless the wheels completely fall off of Wisconsin, I think they'll represent. What are they in the Legends? No, Leaders.
They're in the Leaders, consistently tussle with Ohio State. It's never a walk in the park. I think they, right. If I'm not mistaken, Ohio State, they had a very close game the year before. They were one of Wisconsin's only losses. I mean, Wisconsin limped into the title game because Ohio State and Penn State were ineligible.
Right.
But this year, you know, they're actually putting up the numbers. And if I'm Ohio State, this Wisconsin team scares me a hell of a lot more than Northwestern. And I think right now Michigan is an afterthought to the Buckeyes, because if Michigan and Ohio State were to play tomorrow, Ohio State would beat the shit out of us.
Oh no, there's no doubt about it. I mean, if they're starting to execute a 2 quarterback system, maybe, because I know I saw a note saying that Braxton Miller and Gwiten are both listed as the number 1 quarterback. I mean, granted, because Miller's recovering from an injury, but you know, if they're gonna transfer both those quarterbacks out, that's dangerous. that's really scary and very disheartening for an outside fan who hates the Buckeyes. I mean, that's very disheartening, because that just puts him in a great position to win, because both of those guys are talented.
Well, you know, Michigan's got to get they have to get back on track. I think defensively they've got a team that can match up with Ohio State and keep up with their offense, I hope. But if their offense, if Devin Gardner stays on his current trend of having one devastating turnover a game, then it will be the difference. I mean, it was the difference last year. They were driving down the field and he turned it over at midfield. I mean, Michigan got shut out against Ohio State in the second half. And it's like I said last year, if you'd have told me Michigan going into the half leading 21-20 that they would hold Ohio State to 6 points in the second half and lose, I would have laughed in your face.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what happened. And that's what happens when you turn the ball over. You lose the turnover battle 9 times out of 10. Well, for Michigan, 8 times out of 10, because they've lost the last turnover battle in these last two games, and they've actually won the game, which is some kind of marvel. I don't know if that's ever been done. But they lead the nation, I think. Only one other team has more turnovers than they do. So the fact that they're 4-0 and they're like minus 8 in turnovers this year, that's going to be their downfall if they can't. If they can't lock it up, if they can't take care of the football, they're done.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I mean, I just don't get it. It's very frustrating to watch. And you know what really annoys me, too, is when Devin Gardner runs with the football. And it's really hard to show you without actually, you know, being in front of you. But when he holds the football way out, like trying to show, hey, I got the football right here, guys. Mm-hmm. And he starts running with it out like that. Oh, that's just so frustrating, because I remember saying, oh, you better hold on, you better tuck that football away, you're going to fumble it. And I think it was either the option play or something like that, and he fumbled it the next play. It's like, dude, you got to tuck it and run. You can't just hold it out like that. It's really frustrating. Just easy mistakes that can be fixed and remedied for future weeks that will cut down on the future turnovers, but it's just, it's really frustrating.
Absolutely. You know what, man? I've got nothing left to give on this podcast. You can have my body, but it will not be me. I'm worn out talking about Michigan doing the simple things that it needs to do to win games. I feel like these last two games have been the two girls and I've been the one cup. I don't know how to feel about it. And I really hope that they right the ship against Minnesota, because I really don't want to have to quit Twitter.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about Michigan State derping away the game against Notre Dame.
They did not derp that game away. I'm going to defend Sparty on this one. Every single one of Michigan's of Notre Dame's scoring drives was aided by penalty. And some of them were legitimate, but there was some bullshit. And they have a legitimate reason to gripe, because that Michigan State defense is as advertised. And, I mean, it legitimately seemed like Notre Dame's plan was, the only way we're going to beat these guys is if they get personal fouls, because we're throwing the ball over the top. And either they're going to intercept it, or we're going to catch it, or there's going to be a penalty. And there were 5 pass interference calls, and I think maybe 2 of them were legit.
Yeah, I felt bad for, what's his name, Latre Waynes. I felt bad for that guy. He was generally picked on by both Notre Dame and the officials. So, I mean, it was very, you know, I'd be frustrated as a Spartan.
Now, but, that doesn't change the fact that when Michigan State was driving down the field, they pulled an Al Borges and called a wide receiver pass.
Yes.
Which was intercepted and ultimately just took a total shit on their soul. there's no other way to put it, man. That's like a heartbreaking turnover. It's hard enough to go into South Bend and win the game. And, you know, the year that Michigan State went to the Big Ten Championship game, those calls went their way. When they ran little giants and they, you know, they went for it on fourth down, it really is that game of inches. I mean, that's their motto this year, inches, inches, inches. And they lost this game by inches or by personal fouls. But
yeah,
we have to go there, and we can't depend on them getting personal fouls. And we're not going to be able to run the ball with our running backs. They're going to be trying to take Devin out of that game, because they want to commit a personal foul every play. What was that phrase? I don't know if Narduzzi said it, but like, you know, controlled personal fouls.
Right.
It's going to be turnovers. The only way Michigan State loses that game, in my opinion, against Michigan, considering the way that Michigan's playing right now, is if they force Spartans into turnovers that give them a short field.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that game is going to be tough. I honestly can't call it right now either way. I think I'll need a couple more weeks in order for me to get a strong opinion on that, because that one can go either way. I mean, you could almost expect another 9-6 game. I mean,
yeah.
It could be a whole other field goal fest. But, you know, just backtracking to Notre Dame, what the one thing I did not understand is Connor Cook getting changed out for Andrew Maxwell there at the last drive. I mean, you were relying on Cook the whole game, but yet you put in someone cold in crunch time, and then just and granted they shot themselves in the foot a couple times with false start penalties. They ended up getting in like a 4th-and-30 situation, and then Maxwell does like a 5-yard scramble. So I mean, I did not understand that. I felt bad for the fan for Spartan fans because they deserved better at the end, and I think Cook deserved better as well, and he needed to play the entire game because I did not understand that call. I was sitting there scratching my head for sure because it was very confusing.
Well, they held Tommy Rees to 142 yards in that game. Despite how often Tommy Rees went downfield, he was held to 142 yards and 4 yards a pass.
He played awful.
Yeah, he played awful. But conversely, Connor Cook went 16 for 32 for 135 yards, the same 4.2 average. So he's only completing 50% of his passes. He did throw a touchdown, but he didn't turn the ball over. But you bring Maxwell into the game because, whether or not we want to admit it, Maxwell is more accurate of a passer than Connor Cook. You take all those drops out of the equation that they had last year, and Maxwell has a decent year. He just doesn't seem to have that it factor, that Kirk Cousins, that, oh, I'm going to lead this team to victory. But when you do bring him in cold, you just have to stick with the person. You know, I can understand the offense's reasoning. I know that Bowman for Michigan State, the co-offensive coordinator, may be the worst offensive coordinator in all of football. So the fact that he's on Michigan State's offensive staff gives me some comfort because he helps call some head scratchers. But their defense is the real deal, and points are going to be at a premium in that game. I mean, they held Notre Dame to 220 total yards. The Michigan's defense gave up 400 yards to Notre Dame. It's, you know, Michigan State turned the ball over one time. It was the difference in the game.
Yep. I mean, and I think if you have two co-offensive coordinators, I think you're in real big trouble there. I don't understand that one. It's like, you know, almost like you'd be like infighting. Let's call a draw. No, no, no. Let's call a sneak. No, 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 no. Let's call a draw. It's like, just, it's weird. I don't know. I don't think I'd love to have co-offensive coordinators. Borges with someone else would be bad enough as it is.
Ugh. Borges with evil Borges?
Yeah. His doppelganger.
All right.
Can you imagine that? A dual Borges offense.
With a full head of curly black hair.
And a mustache.
It would be like hipster Borges, and he would smoke cloves and say, fuck the pass, we are going to run the ball.
I ran the ball before it was cool.
We're going to run the wing tee, bitches.
That would be pretty funny. I'd probably be annoyed with that pretty quick. But,
Oh, yeah. All right, we're going to wrap this up. I'm done. My throat hurts, and I'm going to go take some more NyQuil and cry myself to sleep for the, what's today, Tuesday? The 4th consecutive night in a row.
All right. Yeah, I'm over that. I'm over the crying stage now. I'm in the remember the good times and laugh kind of stage.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think for me, it's I've kind of blended those two games into one giant shit show, and I'm calling it the Uke Akroning.
Yep, I like that. That's a
the Uke Akroning. That'll be the name of this episode.
All right.
All right. Well, this is the Sophisticated Boner. Hopefully, we got the blood flow going to your privates enough for you to finish this episode. And I'm your host, Mark the Nomad. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark the Nomad. But after all the mentions I had of grandparent sex and domestic violence and boners, you probably will avoid me. So in that case, you should follow my co-host, Joshua Henschke, at tbhreport.com. And you can find our podcast on thebighousereport.com, but we're also on iTunes. So give us a subscribe, give us a like, give us 5 stars, and maybe I'll post a picture of my nipples for you on the internet. See you later.